Yeah, you can call me that as I walk with the Luddites and my trusty axe.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Neowin Cast. Today is Tuesday, June the 20th, and we're recording the third edition of the general newscast for Neowin.net. I'm Paul Lardiop, joining everyone again from the Neowin news team. And we've got the same panel as last week. We've got Shane Pittman, Todd Tanner, and Chris Vendemio joining us today. So Shane, again from Carolina, celebrating their Stanley Cup win there.
Unbelievable.
does anyone care about the Cup? I mean, that's what we're hearing up here in Canada. It's like, oh, well, nobody really cares about the Cup up in Carolina. Like, was it big there? You guys partying?
Or? To be honest with you, I didn't even know it at Carolina that the Hurricanes had made it that far. You know, I don't keep up with hockey. This is, come on. I mean, we're in the southern United States here. It's like, it's kind of like what was the movie Cool Runnings with the Jamaican bobsled team? You know, what the hell are we doing playing hockey?
Yeah, I heard you guys have
winning the Stanley Cup.
You guys have like only five arenas on that side of the state, I think, including the one that the Hurricanes play in. So, well, welcome back, Shane, and joining us from south of you, all the way from sunny Florida, Mr. Todd Tanner himself. Todd, you there?
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, his toilet's all good this week.
Yeah, my toilet's not going to last week. He had anything this week.
Todd, if you want to clear that up for everyone, quick, what happened last week with the story of the gurgling toilet?
All right. Make a long story short, an upstairs neighbor that's a little senile, I suppose, threw down Ajax dish detergent into the toilet, and the gurgling, bubbling up, spitting up that I had was nothing more than tons of soap suds, and because the water couldn't go anywhere because of the soap, and yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So if you missed the end of the last cast, Todd had to run because he had gurgling gas in his toilet. And joining us from the Bronx, New York City, Mr. Vendemo,
Brooklyn, man.
Brooklyn.
It's Brooklyn.
Bronx is a neighborhood.
How could you say that? I'm from Brooklyn, and that hurts me.
It's okay. I still
from
love
New
Paul.
York, Chris Vendemio. Bang bang 023 on the forums.
Take the safe way out, my man. Yeah, how's it going, guys? Yeah.
So we're here again for another edition of the Neowin Cast. We should also clarify one thing before we get into the topics for this week. Everyone was commenting, why aren't you guys called the NeoCast anymore? Well, we're not allowed to call ourselves a NeoCast anymore. We received some legal notification from a company that has that lovely name that rolls off the tongue nicely, trademarked. So we had to come up with a new name on the spur of the moment, and it sort of stuck. So we are the Neowin Cast, cast all in caps at the end. So if you guys were wondering why we're not NeoCast anymore, now you know. So we got a whole bunch of news to cover this week, starting off with Mr. Gates leaving Microsoft, or planning to leave Microsoft as of July 2008. He'll be transitioning out of his day-to-day role of running the company by then, and he's going to start transitioning out as of right now. He says he wants to take some time to work on the foundation that he and his wife have started with all the money he's made from Microsoft. For the most part, I think Gates is a class act. I mean, he's given so much to charity, so much back to the community that he's sort of pioneered software for. I don't know, he's a nice guy. It's a good thing, and obviously he's going to retire. He could have retired after like a few years at his company once it got started with all the money he made, but to sort of be at the helm and take Microsoft to where it is now, that's a big accomplishment for someone like that. Everyone knows the story of... I forget what the analogy would be there, but he took a company from nothingness and gave hardware what it needed, software.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have given Bill Gates and Microsoft a lot of flack over the years, and you know, Microsoft gets to be the butt of a lot of jokes just because of their size, and regardless of all of that, you can't deny that Bill Gates is one of the greatest philanthropic persons of our time, if not of all times. This guy gives so much back to the world, to the global environment. And for him to, you know, to be willing to say, okay, you know, for the last, you know, however many years, Microsoft has been, you know, my full-time job, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has kind of taken a back seat and been my part-time job, if you will. In by 2008, I want to reverse that. I want to make, you know, the foundation my full-time job and put, you know, Microsoft kind of on the back burner as far as I'm concerned, you know, to make, you know, my time here part-time. You know, I think that's a bold step for him. And you know, regardless of what you have to say about Microsoft, and you know, a lot of people give them, like I said, a lot of flack for being as big as they are. But you know, you just kind of—I mean, you can't say anything bad about the guy and his ambitions and his, you know, like I said, his philanthropic contributions. I mean, what can you say?
Yeah, what can you say? You know, I love the guy. I'm really not going to say much on it because there isn't much to say. The guy is a great human. He's done an incredible amount of good for the human race. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of people that disagree with me, you know, because of his business practices, but the guy has literally, as I said in the pre-show, given more money in a year than some countries on this planet make a year in their gross domestic product, which is ridiculous compared to other people that are in his position, you know, rich and powerful. He's a great giver to charities. He just doesn't give to one, he gives to many. He helps for AIDS victims, he helps for third world countries, for, you know, for drought and plagues and anything you can think of, this guy gives. And it really hurts me sometimes when I read in the forums, people will say when, you know, he got nominated for some award, I forget, a couple months ago, I guess. Some people say, oh, he just doesn't give enough compared to how much he makes. That's ridiculous, okay? The guy gives more money than you can possibly imagine and helps out in ways you couldn't even fathom, and people still always find a way to belittle him and make him smaller than he actually is because he's Bill Gates and because he's from Microsoft, and that's just ridiculous. Guy's a great human, and I'm, like I said, I'm very happy for what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear, too. It's not like he's leaving the company. He's still going to be the chairman. He's just leaving his daily position of chief software architect. You know, he found something he enjoys, and it's fulfilling to him, and why not go with it? He's not only making his own life better, he's making millions of other people's lives better. And on the flip side, looking at the business aspect of it, it may help Microsoft a little bit. It may give them a breath of fresh air where they need it. You know, I'm not criticizing his decisions and all like that, but sometimes putting someone else in a decision-making role gives them the ability to present new ideas that maybe weren't presented before, weren't thought up before. And it could benefit everyone, even the consumer in the long run.
Yeah, let's talk about that quick. Gates has completely driven this company. Well, I guess Ballmer had a bunch of stuff to do with it, but for the most part, Microsoft has been driven by Gates since day one. And with him going out of the day-to-day role as running the company, it's going to be interesting to see what Microsoft ends up doing, how their business model changes, how their products change, how their whole outlook on software changes just because Bill Gates isn't there anymore. Chris, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Like, wow, Gates isn't there anymore. What's Microsoft going to do? Every time you hear Microsoft, the first thing most people instinctively think of is the guy who founded it, Bill Gates.
Yeah, it's definitely going to give us all something to watch in the coming years, especially starting in 2008 when the change is finally completed. You know, growing up, this is the Bill Gates generation of Microsoft is all I knew about, all any of us knew about. And it's going to be interesting to see. Some people are saying that he's bailing out now, jokingly, but, you know, what can other people do at the helm of this? Worst comes to worst, he could always jump back in. It's still going to be his company. He's still there, you know, if there's an emergency arises. But, you know, it should be fun. You can't ever say no to new ideas until you give him a try. And, hey, why not? He can have his fun, and we can have our fun watching and, as usual, overly criticizing every single move the company makes from here on out.
You know, I think you got to take a look at, you know, when, you know, Gates has already stepped back as far as the day-to-day role of actually fully running the company. You know, that's pretty much in Ballmer's hands, and he kind of, you know, took this role as chief of software development, and the company has done great under Ballmer's directions as far as, you know, the day-to-day operations go. And I have complete faith that between the powers that be at Microsoft, between Bill and Steve, that they will make the decisions for how to go about replacing Bill with people that are fully capable and qualified and have the same similar visions and directions as they share.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's put it simply. Microsoft certainly has the manpower to replace Bill Gates. It's kind of hard for me to even, think that Bill Gates wouldn't run the company, even though he will be, but he's not going to do the day-to-day operations as much. So they certainly have the capacity to replace him, and I think it's good because, they need some fresh take on the industry that they created. I mean, they, put simply, they made the computer business. They are the computer business, and they, I'm not saying they're stagnant or they're not, doing anything revolutionary, but they're just, I think it's good to get a new fresh take on things that this might bring, and it's probably good for them, and that's good for everybody, I think.
Yeah, Microsoft's been hiring the best and brightest of the computer science world now for the better part of 20 years, so they have lots of really ingenious people that have been developing products, and I'm sure they can fill leadership roles. So I think they already announced, I forget the guy's name that they announced, it's going to be sort of transitioning into his job. But
yeah, I think it's the biggest software company. Ray Ozzie.
Yeah, that's right. You'd think the biggest software company in the world is not going to leave the company to a complete newbie that doesn't know anything about it. So this guy's been around for a while. He's been with Gates or been working indirectly with Gates. So, yep, interesting to see where Microsoft will go with Bill Gates not at the helm anymore. On the topic of Microsoft here, now that we've been nice to Microsoft for once, there's a blog post that's been circulating around. It got dug, and a lot of people were interested in talking about it. This guy here, Ramblings of a Computer Guru, it's neosmart.net is his blog. He wrote a nice little article detailing why he thinks Microsoft is quote-unquote beating on a dead horse with Windows Vista. He discusses the fact that Microsoft's been keeping all this backwards compatibility, all this old code inside the system, and that's what's causing all the failures, all the delays, all the system slowdowns, just everything's based on that. Like, they should just throw out all this old stuff, start new, mature the platform, and move from there.
Well, like we said in the pre-show, Microsoft is in a position, at least right now, where they have to oblige and support older generation hardware and tons of configurations and a whole bunch of stuff. And yeah, I would guess that it's stifling their ability to innovate the way that people would want to see. Eventually, like we said before, they're going to have no choice but to leave the whole backwards compatibility thing behind and just go forward. They did partially that with the Xbox 360, where only a certain amount of games were compatible, the rest, weren't. I think they're going to have to do something similar here in the future because, I'm not going to bash them for what they're doing with Vista, with the, cutting this and cutting that thing, because, hey, we discussed that last week, and I think if they were going to keep everything in there, it would be just be delayed to, like, 2009 or something. I think they will have no choice in the future. Maybe the next version of Windows or the one after that, I don't know. But they're going to have to just make the decision and just go and not support, Windows 98 stuff or even Windows 2000 stuff at some point. They're just going to have no choice because they just can't do it anymore, okay?
Yeah, I mean, one argument this guy makes, and I think it's a very valuable argument, is that they can do what they do on the 360 and emulate the hardware and the basic backend that to support all the old software by using their already existent virtual server software. You can run, you can modify that very quickly to simply run applications on demand in a virtual environment that emulates the 98, the XP code base. And that gives you a lot more breathing room as far as Vista goes and as far as future Windows versions goes, as far, in terms of progressing and innovating without worrying about cutting off support for the older stuff. You can't go on forever. You can't innovate for the future if all you're worried about is breaking compatibility with the past. It's impossible. You have to keep things in a certain order to make sure everything works with the backwards compatibility otherwise. Apple did it with OS X. They saw OS 9. They realized they had to make a big jump, and they did it. They took a risk. people weren't happy with it at first, but look at them now. People love it. And it was a smart move on their part. And it's the same thing Microsoft has to do. They have to eventually say, look, we're sorry. This is where we have to stop. We have to introduce new innovations, and it's going to cost us some compatibility. We're going to give you a virtual environment to do it. It may not perform as well as, you know, a real environment, but it'll work for you. With the hardware getting up there, it's very easy to emulate environments now. I don't know. It's just they're in a tough spot. I definitely wouldn't want to be in their spot if I had to make the decision of when to cut off backwards compatibility. But, you know, going back to Windows 98 days, you don't support Windows 98 anymore. So why are you supporting the software for it in your next generation OS?
Yeah, you know, I agree with what Todd and Chris have said. You know, it's not like there hasn't been a jump as far as cutting off legacy compatibility before. I mean, we've gone through it before with, you know, with the jumps from old DOS days to, you know, Windows platforms. And, you know, it's inevitable that there is a point in time where they're going to have to cut off support. And, you know, if you're already talking about you're getting ready to drop complete support at all for any of the Windows 98 or Millennium-based platforms, then why worry about having compatibility for them in your next generation OS? And, you know, I can't help but wonder, you know, what we would be looking at as far as the OS goes, as far as, you know, the total size of the OS and any type of speed improvements, performance and, you know, increases, if we didn't have the compatibility concerns in place. I hope that in the next version of Windows to come after Vista, they seriously consider totally doing away with all backwards compatibility prior to, say, Windows 2000, which is what XP and all are based off of. So to me, it would make sense for this, if not Vista, for the next step after Vista to be the cutoff point.
Yeah, and he finishes off the article by saying that it's just the little things that are holding him back. Like, look inside your accessories folder. You still have the same basic version of Paint, calculator, and everything. It hasn't changed since like the Windows 95 days. Even like nobody uses that stuff anymore. They'll download. There's freeware that's way better than that and more readily available. Yeah, it's backwards compatibility. It's more of an issue for corporate people that are still running their in-house applications and stuff that depend on all this 16-bit stuff or 32-bit now. So, like we said in the last thing with Bill Gates leaving, Microsoft's got a lot of bright people, and we hope they work it out, because it's definitely holding back their operating system development, as we saw with Vista, you know, over the last 6 years, and look what they've put together so far. Next thing we wanted to touch on, Windows Live Messenger has finally been released. It's the first official release, I believe, in their Live series of products, Live being Microsoft's new initiative to get all their online services under one tree. There's Windows Live Messenger, Windows Live Mail, and a whole bunch of other things. So Live Mail was Hotmail before. They just want everything to be unified. So Windows Live Messenger is introducing a whole bunch of new features and a revised UI. There's video calls, and you can do Windows Live Call using Verizon now, some of their services. You can buy cordless phones designed for use with Windows Live Messenger, the voice feature, just like you can do with Skype right now, too. And there's those new sharing folders that I find ridiculously annoying. You can publish folders and have your friends view all your shared files whenever they want. It's out. They're not forcing the upgrade right now. If you're running the beta, you'll get the little notification saying, hey, please upgrade. But I still can't use the thing without, we were talking earlier, Chris, I still can't use it without patching it, quote-unquote, getting rid of a few of the more intrusive parts of the UI.
Yeah, I mean, I refused to install it yesterday until whoever, I don't know the guy's name, unfortunately, over at apatch.tk, until he released his patch, because there's so much extra stuff in the UI that I simply don't need or don't want there, that I just refuse to use the application without all that stuff removed. And it's interesting to see, not just Microsoft, but Yahoo and AOL also, they're at this point now where they're trying to cram so many features into their clients that they're sort of running out of space where to put it. Buttons are appearing all over the place. Microsoft is, you know, since version 7 of MSN Messenger, they've had the little text there at the bottom of the IM window that's completely annoying and distracting. And you wonder if maybe they have to start streamlining a little bit, cut back on the stuff you don't need. you know, it's great that I can use Verizon to make phone calls now over Windows Live Messenger, but am I going to do that? Not a chance. If I wanted to, Skype already offers free calling. AIM even has free incoming numbers available for people. You know, I don't need a million to one services in my IM client. You mentioned the shared folders feature. Agent Smith, Don, who couldn't be here today with us, he and I spent about 20 minutes last night trying to figure out the proper DLL file to unregister so we can get that off of my computer screen, because it's the most annoying feature there is, and they implemented it in such a, well, I hate to say it, but an ass-backwards way. AOL, I'm accustomed to, it's not a new feature, I'm accustomed to it from AOL clients for years now. And you just chose a folder you wanted to share, and you made sure, you know, you can say who can share, who can look in that folder, and who can't. Simple as that. Microsoft creates a whole virtual folder for you, which is, it's ridiculous. It's another icon, more bloat. And I think everyone's going to agree with me that eventually they have to start cutting features out instead of just adding and adding and adding.
You know, I think we talked in the pre-show, and a lot of what you're saying has to do with, you know, how I use IM. And I know a lot of people don't use IM for the way I use IM, which is just to talk to people. I don't care about all of these bells and whistles and being able to, you know, have all of this multimedia crap in my instant messenger client. I just want to talk to somebody. I've got over 150 contacts that I talk to routinely, and you know, they're spread out across across Microsoft's instant messenger platform, AIM, Yahoo, and it's just ridiculous for me to want to have all of these instant messenger clients installed, which is why I am a hardcore proponent for Trillion. For me, like I said, all of these bells and whistles mean absolutely nothing, which, you know, probably a vast majority of people aren't going to agree with me, because, you know, people like bells and whistles. But for me, an instant messenger client, I just want to, you know, have the ability to talk to the people I need to talk to, maybe transfer a file back and forth every now and then, and that's it. And, you know, so for me, you know, Windows Live Messenger, yeah, it's nice. It's got all kinds of stuff that it'll do, but it means absolutely nothing to me.
Yeah, there's not much for me to say here. I think it's a good product. It's a little bloated now. I think a lot of people have the same feeling with AOL's AIM software now, too, that it's just too bloated for what it is. It should just be a IM client with, minimal features like file transfer or photo sharing or whatever, you know. As for the client itself, it's nice. I think it looks great. I know a lot of people, like Chris, in the past have complained about the UI and the fonts and all that. I think it looks great. I think they should take a page out of AOL, though, with AOL's new AIM Pro client, which is geared for businesses, which is a minimal client with just, it literally, I believe, it's a complete rewrite using a different language for it. And it just supports the basic stuff. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles. I mean, it has the integrated, XM radio and AOL radio and all that stuff, too. But I'm talking, like, all the unbelievably useless junk that most people never use in these clients. And Microsoft's going to probably have to do the same thing, either with the new version of the client itself, or with a pro or stripped down version of the client. They're gonna have no choice but to do that, because people are gonna get tired of the bloat. I think people saw that with ICQ and just said bye, and they started moving towards Trillion and Miranda and all these all-in-one deals.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Microsoft needs a pro client. They had a pro client. They had Windows Messenger. You know, you had MSN Messenger for the average home user who wants all the bells and whistles. Then you had Windows Messenger for the corporate people who just wanted a standard messaging application. And whatever happened to that? You know, I haven't seen any new releases of that. And I'm sure a lot of people would appreciate that, and not just in the business world.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess the main reason people used the professional client was you could also run your own little proprietary Microsoft chat server and have that running inside a business, but it was lightweight and didn't have any ads or anything like that. And I used to use that until a lot of my friends, you know, every now and then they'll chat you with a video conference or whatever that requires a newer version of MSN. We should also mention the fact that Yahoo Messenger is going to be integrating with MSN Messenger, so you'll be able to talk to contacts from either service on either platform eventually. It's not included as of right now, but it is in the Yahoo beta, I believe, or it's coming in the Yahoo beta. very shortly, and Microsoft will have it in Windows Live Messenger pretty soon. The program also runs pretty quick as compared to 7.5, which was the previous release. It logs in really quick, and I'm still not a fan of the new UI. I still need to patch it, but Windows Live Messenger 8 is out, and you can grab it at get.live.com/messenger/overview. Next thing we wanted to touch on this week, we bashed Adobe last week for making such a stink about Microsoft wanting to include the PDF publish functionality in Office 2007. If you missed the show last week, Microsoft was planning, or has currently included in Beta 2 of Office 2007, the ability to export any Office document as a PDF file natively right inside their Office suite. And Adobe took issue to that. And we all jumped on Adobe last week, as did most of the press corps, saying that, why are they doing that? OpenOffice does this. There's lots of other free programs out there that do this. So Adobe issued a statement speaking out why they're doing what they're doing and sort of debunking a lot of the myths around what's going on.
You know, I really have to give it to them. I appreciate the effort for, you know, them coming out and saying, you know, at least coming up with us with a statement. You know, they could have just said nothing, but unfortunately, nothing in this case may have been better. because basically what they said was that they were afraid that Microsoft would taint the PDF format, that they would somehow try to extend it or build upon it and make it something that was incompatible with with the existing PDF formats. And it's completely ludicrous, because the only thing that Microsoft was doing was giving you the ability to export your, say, Word document, for example, to a PDF document. They weren't giving you the ability to edit that PDF document. You would still have to have, you know, Adobe's product to edit the PDF. The only thing you could do is go back in and edit your original Word document and then re-export it to a PDF or whatnot. They're not giving you any way to muck the PDF format. It's like I said, I think Adobe would have just been better off if they had said nothing.
Yeah, I mean, last week I think I said they were shooting themselves in the foot by not speaking. Well, they just put their foot in their mouth by saying something. This whole idea that Microsoft's going to fragment the technology on them is absurd. Microsoft was just giving people a way to have a cross-platform documentation of whatever they needed to share with people, and without worrying about, you know, format support and such. What are they doing? Who's running Adobe at this point? I would love to know who's the figurehead behind, you know, all the decisions, because this is a laughingstock at this point. This is almost pathetic. They're going to fragment our technology? Give me a break, man. Are you kidding me? You just have to realize when there's a great business opportunity for you, a good chance to sell your software by having a major player like Microsoft officially support it. And they're saying no because they might change it on us. They can't change it according to the licensing. We all know that. You know that. Microsoft knows that. Deal with it. They shouldn't have said anything at all. I was happier thinking they were just idiots, not morons.
I'm not going to say much here because I don't want to get worked up. I mean, my feeling is pretty well known last week. I think Adobe was being really stupid for what they did. I think they're continuing to be stupid for even responding to this, because they're just trying to save face in the public eye. They're afraid they're going to lose customers, which they already have, I'm sure. And they're just trying to save face, and it didn't work. They make themselves look even more, I wouldn't say selfish, but more, you know, okay, selfish, yeah. More selfish, that they think that Microsoft is going to, like, come in there and just destroy their delicately created worldwide known phenomenon of PDF. Well, they're not. You know, it's illegal. They couldn't do that if they wanted to. And frankly, they wouldn't, you know. So with Adobe, you know, yeah, okay, they're trying to protect their IP there. Whatever. They were stupid for what they did. They're stupid for even responding, and that's all I'm going to say on that one.
Yeah. If you look at the articles that are being published all over the place here, I'm reading one here on CIO.com as we were doing the cast. They butter, like, the Adobe press release, completely, anyone who reads it, they get buttered up for the first, like, three-quarters of the article, and only do you actually get to the real point of what they're trying to say here. Like, they're saying, yes, it's an open standard, yes, we want more people to use it, yes, it's our technology, and we love it when all these droves of people are publishing their documents in it, But then at the end, they're like, Adobe welcomes innovation and competition, and they're confident in their ability to drive it, but they want a fair and competitive landscape in the software industry. And that makes zero sense to me whatsoever. Like, it's your format. They're supporting your format in the largest office suite on the planet, and you don't want that. I mean, maybe it would take some market share away from the Acrobat Professional, but think how many people would say, oh, shoot, yeah, I don't have that font on my computer or something. Save it as a PDF, or, oh, let's print that PowerPoint off. It's great. Like, it's the biggest office suite on the planet, and Adobe doesn't want this to happen because they think somehow hurts the company. Like, please.
Yeah, what I don't understand is they say about, level playing field and all, and yet while they do mention XPS, the Microsoft competing format, the main concern is still Microsoft including PDF support. You know, Microsoft is, they want to throw in a big competitor for PDF. You know, XPS, they have big plans for that, but they're saying, here, we'll also throw in PDF so the two can sit side by side. So it's not just us shipping XPS and forcing it on people. And Adobe's taking exception to that, and it just makes no sense to me. I've tried so hard to understand the logic behind the decisions, and it comes off looking like a fifth grade business experiment where you're just hoping that something intelligible comes out, and you just keep getting the same nonsense over and over again.
The only thing I can say is that, that I agree with everything that you guys have said. I think it's Adobe's trying to save face by making this statement. I still, stick to my original comments that I think they would have been better off if they had just said nothing, and let us speculate as to why they were making this move. But in the end, Microsoft, they've already said that they intend to allow, to issue this feature as an available download. And, I can only hope that Adobe wakes up and by the time Service Pack 1 comes around, they say, okay, include it in the Service Pack and we'll call it even.
Yeah, well, we should mention just before we go on here that, yes, you're still going to be able to get the functionality in Office. It's just going to be some sort of an optional download now, and you'll have to agree to all these licensing terms or whatnot. So they're not completely stripping it. They're just stripping it by default from the Office suite. I mean, it'd be nice to have it in by default, but, I mean, if we can still have the functionality and Adobe's cool with that, I don't know. I'll have to download one more little plugin after I reformat my system. So, moving on, Microsoft is purported to be working on a new handheld console of some type. Either it's an iPod killer or a PSP competitor or whatnot, we're not too sure. But Robbie Bach, who previously oversaw the Xbox division at Microsoft, is apparently heading up this new project with inside Microsoft, according to a few big newspapers in the States there. Everyone these days seems to be trying to kill the iPod or trying to one-up the iPod. Chris, I guess you'll mention that when you chime in here. But everyone wants a share of Apple's massive dominance. They have over 50% of the MP3 player market now. And Microsoft has to try to get their hand in there.
Well, it's not necessarily, from my perspective, an iPod or PSP, iPod killer, but more of a PSP killer. Mainly, they had the whole origami thing a few months ago, we discussed earlier. Everyone was speculating, including me, on a previous podcast, that it was going to be a gaming handheld unit, and it wasn't. And everyone was, saying, oh, they're making such a mistake, they should definitely have a gaming handheld, because if anybody could take on Sony's PSP and Nintendo's DS, or even the Game Boy, it would be Microsoft. They have the ability, they have the money, they have the resources. I was quite disappointed when it wasn't. And to put it simply, it doesn't make sense for them not to go into the market, whether it's an iPod killer or not. Yeah, okay, I don't really like the iPod. I think it's so overhyped and it's just ridiculous. I don't think it's the greatest MP3 player. The design is nice, it looks good, but I don't think it's the greatest. There's certainly other MP3 players out there now that are way better than the iPod. And what's with the prices? I mean, Apple just gets away with charging like $400 for an iPod. I just don't get it. If they make an iPod killer or a PSP killer, it's Microsoft's game because they can do it. They're going to be the company that can take competition up there and just go with it. Whether it's an origami like type of, you know, handheld or some sort of new offshoot of the Xbox, miniaturized or whatever. It's Microsoft's game, and they're the ones that can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just tired of everyone using the term iPod killer. It seems that anything that can play MP3s these days is instantly thrown out there as an iPod killer. Some of these devices, they overpromise, you know, all this marketing hype, and then you get a piece of garbage, just a heap of plastic in your hand. Sometimes you have a great device like the Creative Zen Vision M, which is an amazing device, but there's almost no marketing behind it, and, well, it never gets out of the water, really. And all the time, Apple just keeps getting more and more converts, and even if Microsoft does release an all-in-one device, are they going to be able to release it in a manner that can compete with the iPod? The iPod is known for its sleek design and its very easy to use interface, you know, click wheel, all the scrolling, everything is 1, 2, 3 automatic with the iPod. You know, can Microsoft compete with that? When you think of Microsoft, you think of, at least I tend to think of, bulky interfaces, bulky devices, you know, a few extra clicks here and there to get through to get to where you want to go in the software. And can that compete with something that Apple offers? Apple has innovated simplistic design that gives you a lot of features and still works beautifully. And I'm not sure Microsoft can jump in there. If they go against the PSP, maybe. PSP has been a huge hit in the US. It's been decent over in Japan, but I don't think it's at the level where it can't be shaken from the top of the order. And even so, it's not at the top of the order with the DS Lite. But if they're going directly after Sony, I think Microsoft has a huge chance. If they're going after Apple, I think Apple's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, between the PSP and the iPod, we're talking about two different genres of devices. I mean, you know, we're not comparing apples apples to apples here. So, you know, if Microsoft is coming out with a gaming handheld, and they're, you know, they've got their eyes, you know, their sights set on the PSP or the DS Lite, it's, you know, I'm not going to say that it's not possible that they can't come up with a top contender for that market. We've got to look at expectations. They had the Origami project recently that wasn't, I don't think, what a lot of people had hoped it would be. A lot of people had hoped that the Origami devices were gonna be, you know, PSP type devices, and they're more along the lines of a scaled down tablet PC. Read an article the other day that was talking about Samsung's first reports on sales of their first Origami devices, and basically what they were saying is that people that bought the Origami device that had no previous knowledge of the technology, no information on the betas and whatnot, that those people were pleased with the product. The people that had researched the information on the betas and, you know, had formed expectations of the product prior to purchasing it were disappointed in the product. So, you know, I think as long as Microsoft goes into this with their right target in mind, if they're looking at taking out an iPod, you don't need to go at an iPod with a PSP, because, like I said, it's not the same type of devices. You're talking about two different markets, and the MP3 player market, portable media player market, there's just a whole horde of devices out there, and you've got a lot smaller, you know, competition range with the portable gaming devices. So if that's what they're headed for, I'm anxious to see what they've got.
One point I want to make is that back in our first show, we had discussed Origami, and our biggest complaint with it was that it seemed like Microsoft lacked the idea of where they want to take this device, the direction, and the targeted group of customers. And Shane, you just made a great point. If they actually target the PSP, if they say, this is what we're going after, we're going after a game system, or if they target the iPod and say, we're going after the top MP3 player, maybe they can do it, but they have to have that direction in there, because that's what they lacked with Origami. They completely just threw it out there and said, it's whatever you want it to be, and, well, it doesn't work like that all the time. And, well, the numbers are showing that people aren't exactly sure how to understand the Origami, and if Microsoft is going to put this device out there, they need to make it very clear from the get-go exactly what it is, exactly what it's going to do, and how it's better than anything else out there. Simple as that.
Yeah, it's still up in the air exactly what this thing is, whether or not it's going to be like a Nintendo Wii, DS, PlayStation 3, PSP sort of deal, and then Microsoft will have the X360, and then this thing whatever it ends up being is not clear, if it's going to be a dedicated music player, video player, or just a straight-up Nintendo-like device, like a DS. But it's interesting. It's a big market. Just look at the number of consoles that have been sold already with the DS that we'll get to at the end of the show there. It's something Microsoft definitely wants to get their hands on. Dell is finally going to be offering AMD desktops, or the ability to have an AMD chip inside your new desktop from Dell, by September of this year. Dell has had the option of having a lot of the Opteron processors from AMD inside the Dell server stuff for a while now. But I don't understand why Dell is doing this right now. Why go to AMD chips right now, or the option of having AMD chips, when you've been pushing Intel chips so hard ever since you guys started? And Intel, which from the benchmarks we've seen so far, their next-gen Conroe / Core microarchitecture stuff, will be spanking anything AMD can put out for the next little bit. So I still don't understand the logic behind why now? Why not a year ago when all the Athlon X2s came out with the dual-core stuff from AMD that was so good and everyone was trying to get their hands on it? Why now?
Yeah, I mean, when you hear this story, the first thought that came to my mind is, welcome to the party, you're about 2 years too late, Dell. You know, what were they doing? People have been begging for this for how long now? AMD had the price point better than Intel, they had performance better than Intel, and now Dell decides we're going to go to AMD just about the time Intel is going to take back the performance throne, and they're cutting prices drastically. You know, this almost got... We keep bashing companies, but where was the decision-making in this? They could have put themselves above and beyond their competition, the pre-built computer competition, such as Gateway and HP. They had offered AMD X2 systems a year ago. They could have blown everyone away. They would have had the performance over anyone else, could have thrown a big video card in there, and you would have had a great gaming machine from a company like Dell, where you don't necessarily expect great gaming machines. And while it's a great move for AMD, it's obviously going to increase the public's awareness of their brand's existence. You know, is it really the right time to be doing that? Should they maybe have, at this point, just waited six more months and then make the decision once both companies have their next-gen stuff out and say, well, is it an advantage of going over to AMD at this point in time? I'm just not sure what they were thinking. And if they had done it 2 years ago, we would have been praising them, worshipping them. But they spent that whole time praising and worshipping Intel, so now, I don't know, I can't see the logic in it.
You know, I agree with what you said. It's kind of like they've shown up late for the party. I have to wonder what the reason is behind this, because if you look, you know, we all know AMD, Dell bought Alienware not too long ago, and if you look at the top Alienware gaming rigs, they're all powered by AMD processors. And, you know, I can't help but wonder what, if any, role that had to play in this decision. But, like Chris pointed out, you know, Intel's getting ready to come to the plate. You know, they're getting ready to step up to the plate with the performance that gamers are going to want. And it's kind of like, hello, Dell, where were you a year ago, 2 years ago? What, you know, why are you doing this now? You're going the wrong way. I don't know.
Yeah, too little, too late. It's probably not going to be in all their systems. It'll be a select option on what I'm guessing would be just their XPS stuff, and maybe they'll have some Sempron stuff on the lower end. But like, if you look on Dell's site now, they've always done this, and it's always bugged me. And there's this guy at work, I won't mention any names, but we're at each other's throats every now and then because he loves Dell and all the things they offer, and I kind of despise Dell. I've never really had good experiences with them, but they've always been pushing Intel chips, and I don't really get that. Like, I know they have some sort of agreement with Intel that they'll only sell Intel chips up to a certain point, but why didn't you do this a year ago, Dell? It would have been great. Moving right along here, the Nintendo DS Lite has been launched in the U.S. now, and it's just doing great. It sold 136,500 units as of June the 11th, and it's outpacing the original DS launch from 2003. It's back to basics. Like I said in the pre-show, the best game for that handheld right now is Super Mario Bros. DS. It's great. It's fun. Like, it's just like you're on your old like SNES or original Nintendo system, and it's a side-scrolling Mario game. It has a universal appeal. Like, look at all the videos that have even been done. You guys have probably seen those on the internet of like the school shows or whatever, the talent shows where they do Nintendo. Everyone understands Nintendo. Everyone understands the Mario theme. So I think back to basics, the touchscreen has picked up. People are liking that. They're getting into the idea of it, even though a lot of people were naysayers on that. They didn't think it would take off.
Well, first I should correct you. The launch of the DS Lite is actually outpacing the original launch of the Game Boy Advance SP.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, the look, yeah, we said this in the pre-show. You guys seem to have thought that the DS was never going to succeed. I didn't feel that way. I thought, as with most things Nintendo, it was going to rock. You know, they like to innovate, and you know, look at Wii. They're going to innovate with that, with the whole you know, nunchuck controller, and you know, the DS has the dual screen and the stylus touch screen, and it's just a great little handheld there, which I will be getting in the mail from Nintendo here in a few days. Thank you very much. To be able to review not only the new DS Lite, but games for it. And I'm very much looking forward to it. It's a terrific little system. what can you say? A new Super Mario Bros. Game. It hasn't been a 2D awesome Super Mario Bros. Game in like 10 years, I think, or something. It's a great game. From what I've seen of the little videos and other people like Paul that have played it, it's a terrific little game. There's the Brain Age game, you know, because Super Mario Bros. The new Super Mario Bros. Game and Brain Age were the number one and number two games for May. Now, you should, to put it into perspective, Super Mario was only available for the last 13 days of the month, to give you a perspective there. That's a huge amount of sales, considering how much software has moved for the DS and for you know, other consoles. So that's a pretty a big amount. And what can you say? It's a great little system. PSP has a lot of catching up to do still, and go Nintendo.
We were talking in the pre-show about maybe Chris and I spoke about not, you know, not expecting the DS to do as well as it has, and then now for the DS Lite to come out. It, to me, I have to say it, you know, I did not expect, you know, when I first looked at the DS, I thought, you know, oh, what's this, you know, you got these two screens, you got to keep, you know, you're watching this side, then you got to watch this side, you're keeping up with what's going on one, you're controlling with the little stylus and whatnot, and trying to use the buttons and the stylus, and you know, it just, to me, it seemed like a nightmare. It seemed like just a disaster waiting to happen, but, you know, it's proven to be otherwise. It is proven to be the number one gaming platform right now, as far as, you know, these the portable devices, and it's completely taken over that market. And, you know, we discussed maybe the only thing that they could have done differently was coming out with the time of year that they came out with the device, maybe coming out in the holiday season. But, you know, it's like, you know, we said in the pre-show, I think if they come out with it now, you know, they get the initial rush of buyers. They've got, you know, from now until Christmas, till the holiday season, to come out with different colors, which, you know, I know, Todd, that doesn't, you know, like you said, that doesn't really matter, you know, what color the unit is, but, you know, it's just another marketing scheme, and it gives them time to develop new games, new titles, accessories, put together, you know, gift packs of games and whatnot with, you know, bundled with the units, and go Nintendo. You know, like I said, hopefully we'll see something coming from Microsoft. You know, competition fuels the industry. Hopefully we'll see something coming from Microsoft in this.
Yeah, what
market.
Can I say? I was completely wrong about this device. I saw DS, I saw a touchscreen, two screens. I'm like, phew, it's over. Sony's going to get the portable market. They're going to dominate it. No one's going to buy into this whole idea. And, well, Mr. Know-It-All was a little wrong. So I apologize to Nintendo because they put out an amazing device. When you can have a game like Brain Age being one of the top-selling games in the market, you've done something right. I don't care who you are. You deserve some kind of business award, whatever it is, because they marketed it perfectly. They let word of mouth spread, and, well, here they are at the top. I could be wrong. I'm sure someone on the forums will point out how wrong I am later on, but I think the DS Lite's outselling all consoles, period, right now, even Xbox 360s. Yeah, so, I mean, wow. Way to go, Nintendo. Once I get my financial status altogether. I know I'm going to be picking one up. I'm going to be picking up Mario. I'm going to be picking up Brain Age. All my money is going to Nintendo, so credit to them. They've done a heck of a job, and they deserve all the praise we can give them.
Yeah, I just got to, you know, say once again, I got to thank Nintendo for sending me... they did send me two games today. I got Nintendogs, one of the carts for Nintendogs, and I got... I know, I can't wait. And I got Metroid Prime Hunters, which as a first-person shooter guy, I can't wait. They're sending me, hopefully, the new Super Mario Brothers and Tetris DS, which, of course, I'll be addicted to and never actually show up on the UN again. So I have to thank Nintendo again. I think this is terrific. I've wanted to do some sort of console news, reviews, anything for the console world for a long time because, as everyone knows, I'm a PC gamer. I love consoles. When I was a kid, I had the last console I had was a PS1. So this is a great thing for me, and I've got to thank Nintendo again.
Yeah, and let's just point out that this is probably the first story in a while where we haven't bashed a company completely. Maybe the Bill Gates story, we gave some credit to the guy, but usually we rip people apart. So, yeah. I guess even Nintendo could bring out some optimism in us, and kudos to them.
Yeah, all I gotta say is GG Nintendo.
And we'll look forward to your review or whatever you end up doing with the DS that you get from Nintendo. It'll be neat to actually get you to review it, because we all trust Todd implicitly when it comes to anything gamers. This guy's been around.
As you should.
So to finish things up this week, we wanted to talk about the RIAA and how they're making absolutely no sense anymore. Latest thing from the RIAA this week, people supposedly are no longer allowed dancing to copyrighted music and posting their video on YouTube. So all those little tweens that are doing all those things and people are laughing at them. I mean, if you're on Neowin, chances are you've seen the stupid videos or run into them somewhere of people trying to lip-sync songs and such and then posting it up and looking like complete morons. But, the RIAA says, no, you can't do that because you're listening to copyrighted music and then you're redistributing it indirectly. Are you serious? Like, what's next? Like, we raise the point, like, so if you have a barbecue in your backyard and you're playing the music too loud and your neighbors happen to overhear you, is that illegal? Is that public performance? Like, I don't know. It's make absolutely no sense to me. So it's a rather absurd thing.
Yeah, you know, this is the stupidest... Well, I won't say stupidest, because it seems that the RIAA is just on an endless tirade of stupidity. But anyway, we're suing 12-year-old kids, dead people, grandmas, anyone and everyone for violating copyright. And where do we draw the line? Where is the end of fair use? What? I don't know. It makes absolutely no sense. I mean, if you buy the CD or you're listening to the music on the radio and you can't have it playing in the background where other people can see it or hear it, what are you supposed to do? Sit in a soundproof booth? I mean, are they going to start limiting how loud you can have your car stereo for fear that someone else, you know, pulled up beside of you at the traffic light might hear it? Come on. People need to stop putting up with this crap.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those, what are you kidding me? And then you slap your forehead moments. I mean,
that's your trademark line now, Chris. I mean, it's like, Chris is angry at something when he says, what are you kidding me?
No, but you seriously have to wonder that. What are you kidding? This is so stupid, you would think it's a joke. You would think it's one big prank the RIAA is pulling on America. But they're serious about it, and you just have to wonder, wow. You know, how can I get a high-paying job like this and not have to do anything intelligent at all? Whatever. I don't even have anything else to add to that.
Well, the only thing I got to add is, you know, the organization must be run by a bunch of monkeys in heat or something, because I just... What? The mindset is just not there. I don't get it. I really don't. Are they trying to alienate the entire planet? It's just ridiculous at this point. You know, I made this statement earlier, and Shane stole it from me, that they sued the kids, they sued the grandma, they sued dead people. Are they going to sue George Bush next? Not that I wouldn't mind, but are they going to sue presidents of other countries? Are they going to sue the universal translator from Star Trek? Are they going to sue God? I mean, it's ridiculous. Whatever, RIAA, for the lose.
Yeah, are you going to say something else if this wasn't on a recorded podcast session, I'm sure.
Negative.
RIAA, what are you doing? Respect minus minus. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Neowin Cast. We'll be back next Monday. We're going to be recording instead of Tuesday due to time constraints and scheduling and whatnot between a few of us. And my thanks to Chris Vendemio, Todd Tanner, and Shane Pittman for being on this edition of the cast. Next week, hopefully, we'll get a fifth member in here. Don, or Agent Smith from the forums, is trying to get home from work all the time to be with us. So hopefully he'll make it next week. And my thanks to Shane and Tim Dore for doing all the editing. And we'll see everyone back here next week on the Neowin Cast.